So basically, I'm here to talk about art. The topic of my presentation is The Stories We Tell, which is basically, in a very summed up version, that everything we do is actually a story. Be it, you know, a fully fledged AAA game or even the match three game. But we'll get to that afterwards. So, first of all, I hope DC does not sue me for this, but actually I didn't make this, and we'll get back to this and on a later notice. And this is not it yet. Thank you. So I'm going to give you a bit of my background so you can understand where I'm coming from. I'm a son of a theater producer and actor. I grew up watching plays. He was also a movie actor. Did a lot of stuff outside of Portugal also. And did also voice acting for movies, animation series, even some games. The Portuguese version of Killzone had voices of him also. So I grew up really close to all the production and creative methods, which is what I'm going to talk about, because I don't think 30 minutes is good timing for to speak about techniques and softwares and whatnot. So afterwards, when I was around 15, 16, I started taking classes. You know, I decided to have an education more directed to arts. My parents always, you know, if it's your thing, do it. They gave me books, they gave me comics, they gave me movies, they gave me everything I needed. And after the years, before I even go to college, I started working on advertising. And around, well, since when I started actually learning about arts, I actually started to learn how to make money from art. So I got my professional jobs when I was actually 17 or 18. Then I went to college. I majored in graphic design. Went back to advertising after finishing college, and I thought, this is not the thing for me. So I started investing more and more in illustration, comics, animation, whatnot. And in 2007, I started working on my first game company, which was Game Invest, where I stayed for 3 years. And after that, I went to Big Moon for a short while and jumped from Big Moon to BioDroid, where I stayed for another 3 years and then went to MediaClip, where I'm working today. So I believe it's really important for a startup, and this is something I noticed even working on advertising or other creative media, to learn how to think about art, which is technically not really art, it's more design work. Because to be an artist, you have to be uncompromised, you have to be free, it's subjective, you know, you have to express something. When you create art for a game or another productive media, you're actually designing something with a specific context. It has constraints, it has technical constraints, it has communication constraints. And in itself, it's, for example, it's a story. So let's move along. So why is it important? If you put something, for example, in a game, you have to be aware of what you're putting in there, because be it, you know, for political reasons, religious reasons, and you might not even be aware of the implications of what you're putting, it can affect the target audience. So, for example, everything must be really, really well researched before you start producing anything, you know? It's something I've noticed a lot when, even with some more well-established companies, the thing is, you want to sit down, for example, you want to do a campaign, and this is also valid for smaller companies, because I also did a lot of indie work for foreign companies. They said, oh, just give us a couple of drawings and whatever comes out, it's fine. And it's not necessarily the best way to proceed, you know. So you're telling something, for example, even a game as simple as Flappy Bird, you know, it's just a dorky bird that you have to make it move around. And that's telling a story, for example. That's telling this thing is an idiot and you have to make it to the rest of the level, and then it works on your compulsion to actually get a job done. So you have to really study the thing. You know, they give you a brief or whatnot, or when you're starting to pitch a game, you have to consider, well, okay, what's the context for this? It's not as much as how are you going to do this, but why are we going to do this? Why is it relevant? For example, many of the mistakes I see from people starting is, well, that thing is a success, we're going to make one just like it. Let's just copy it with our twist. And that's not going to be a good idea, because we'll be always compared to the one that came before. Which doesn't mean you won't have the ability to create something which is based on something else, because creativity is basically just association of knowledge and experience, that you can twist it and create something which is a variant and strong by itself. You know, everybody played first-person shooters, for example, but you know what's the difference between a Call of Duty, you know what's the difference between a Doom, what's the difference between a Destiny. They have their own identity, in spite being all first-person shooters. Same goes for Match 3 games or text adventures, whatnot. They have their own thing. They create an identity for themselves. So basically, it's about the message. What kind of spin we can put on what we're doing. And this is really important nowadays, because, for example, when I joined Miniclip, I remember that Android was not really a standard platform for developing games. And there were games, you know, on the Google Play Store. Well, I don't remember if it was called like that at the time. But, you know, it was, since it was an open platform, you would see a lot of crap just going inside and many things being published, and there was no real content. You just look at it, okay, it's a 5-minute game to play in the bathroom, whatnot. However, if you went to the Apple Store, you could notice more better content, because they have bigger restrictions, so you have to make a better product to make it come out. So I started to watch how it was going to develop, and then I saw the boom that the games were starting to have across the years, and it was amazing. So everything, more and more, is getting more and more polished. So you have to create, it's very important to create an identity, something that people can relate. And you have to go to create that identity to your pool of experience. So it's important, and it's something I also see from a producer, or in the past, actually, or others, the people or the clients that are ordering you to do some specific task. They don't care about your background. They don't care about your experience. They don't care about your knowledge base. They just actually send, oh, I just need a guy that's running across the screen. That's what I need. You say, well, you don't need that. You need a guy that's running across the screen that actually makes people want him to run across the screen. And this is really important, because if everybody picks up a game, if the game is perfect, you just, oh my God, this is really good. It doesn't matter if it's a really simple game or a really complex game. You can actually feel quality in what you're using. And if you don't see quality, you'll immediately notice. You might not even comment, oh, this is a good game. You just keep on playing it. But if it's a cheap thing, a cheap-made product, you'll start, oh, the art is not that good, the controls are iffy, it's not polished. And that leads to the second question, which is, everything you do tells a story about you. This is both important, both to the artist and both to the company. Because, I'll use the example. Miniclip actually takes a lot of time polishing their stuff. It's really hard, because we do multiplayer games, and that has it's a whole new challenge. So we keep optimizing both art, both code, everything else. So if Miniclip put out a game, for example, like Flappy Bird, it would be interesting, but it's completely different from what we're used to do. And I'm going back to this one. It doesn't mean the game would suffer for it, but the company would suffer because it was out of the quality range that people are used from the products. So you're not only selling a product itself, but you're also selling the company, and you're selling yourself. So it's really important to keep a constant flow of integrity in what you're developing and your thought processes. So the next picture, or the next slide, it's about a game that Miniclip published. And I'll explain the processes behind it. So the game existed. It had a really huge fan base online, which is Hambo, which is basically a parody of Rambo and his best friend. So the thing is, his best friend is kidnapped, and it's this guy here. His best friend is kidnapped, and he's going through a lot of levels. It's a fragger type game, where you throw bombs to kill your adversaries or other weapons. And so you have to kill them, as many adversaries are there in the level. And the version we released for mobile didn't have what, for due to technical constraints, the level design that was free to, for the players to make. But they gave us the game, and we were like a four-man team. And they said, oh, two artists and two programmers, if I'm not mistaken. And they said, well, take the project. Do whatever you want with it. I was saying, okay. Are you sure? Yes. Are you really sure? Sure. Oh, this is gonna be good. So I sat down with the other artist. He was making the, he makes most of the trailers that for our games at Miniclip. And he also helped with the user interface design. So we sat down in the meeting room for like 30 minutes. We just start whipping out ideas for the trailer, which was the first thing we made, which unfortunately I won't be able to show you here because it takes a lot of time from the presentation. So we sat down and said, okay, it's Rambo. What are we going to use? Let's use all the crappiest cliches we can get, you know, suck up from all the B movies we watched during the years. He's also really mad about crappy movies. We have this huge, extensive collection of bad movies. So we picked it up, and we got the idea. Then we start sketching up some graphics, and we have a really good lead artist. He has a thing that is, do your thing. You know, I know what the company vision for the development is, so but if you're getting free range to do something, do it. And I'll just nudge you in the less wrong direction if it needed be, but just do your thing. So we did. And we turned this into this. This picture alone took me like 3 days to make. We used one of the backgrounds that was going to be used in the game, actually. My friend, that colleague, Vasco, made the logo. This is one of the parts, for example, the beginning of the trail, you see helicopters in the background, the machine gets blowing. These two, actually, not him, but her, is one of the playable characters you can use in the game. It's called, we gave her the cute name of Scarlett Johansson. and we just started, you know, let's hug it. Let's make it the darkest thing possible. Let's make this a cheese fest. And we used all the cliches. And it was really funny. The trailer is all the bad acting things, you know, the guy in the rain screaming, the bad cop just coming out, and I mean bad cop in a YMCA style cop, and dragging into the car, police car, the teary eyes, everything. I remember doing this presentation of a trailer for a room full of college students, and everybody just start crying their asses off laughing. So it was a good sign. So we just did everything we could. You know, we start pulling even more and more from our pool of enjoyment. And for example, when the adversaries, I'm going to move to the next slide. These are different some of the different skins we use. So we try the best to create, you know, use something that it's pop culture also, but could be used without, you know, getting into trouble through legal stuff. We had, you know, our beautiful Borat. I don't remember all the names we have for the skins. You know, the Ash Pig, the Big in Black. I think it is Harrison Ford, I think. Last of the Portions. I don't remember all the names, but we went for everything. So we actually added some of our own branding things. This was from Frager. We had the Monster Island version. This is a homage. I'm not going to tell you to what. And this was one of our favorites. We called it Just a Beaver. And it's really good because it showed that people actually enjoy nature, you know? So it was that funny because you see people, I take a lot of time to see what the fans say about the games. I watch all the reviews that people make. And they said, how can we make this even dorkier? Well, Miniclip is actually a family company, so we can't stretch our things, you know, too much. So, but the guys, when they die, they explode. I know. So what are you going to do? Pork rind, you know? So the guy explodes, it becomes a can of Spam, it becomes a burger, it becomes pork chops, it becomes fries, everything. And you see people just fooling around with, and they say, oh my God, this is so wrong, but it's amazing. And it's really fun to see the people, the videos that people are making in the reviews and exploring the game and see things they're not expecting to see. So I'm gonna give you some other screenshots. These are the levels. I remember it was so fun to work on this. I made around 32 frames of animation per day because it was really fun to work on it. And I remember saying this to my art lead. I said, how many times are you going to make this? One day. I can get you a full character in one day. I said, really? It's a word that goes around a lot. And I said, yeah, really. And then it's just popping out, and you actually seeing the programmers when they were inserting the frames during the game, just starting laughing on their desks. But it went through lots of iterations, especially with the backgrounds and some of the character designs, because the first ones were more goofy, and they were too goofy, so to the point that they were probably more adequate for a very juvenile audience. But that's not the idea. For example, Miniclip is everybody plays games, so we have to make them accessible to as much people possible. So we stick to the rule, and everybody that picked up the game, which I advise you to do, it's free to play. and we just start joking around and keep making more and more stuff. You know, the skin for the opera pig, and the emo pig, and Spartan pig, and everything else. It turned out to be, I think it was during the first week and went to the top 10 on the most grossing, top grossing games in the American App Store. So this is the thing. We actually did homework, you know? We sat down, discussed our ideas. Let's figure out what's best for the game. It's important, obviously, to have iterations and have a lot of input, but for the most part, we got free range to do our thing. And they trusted us on this, and it panned out. So here's the thing. We took the story that was given to us, which is basically this. You know, if you go back and forth, you see, that's really bland now. And this is, well, I'm not saying this is bad. I'm saying this is programmer art. The guy that made this, you know, I don't know how to code. I don't do art. But the basic physics, the basic mechanics for the game are still the same. It's just, we just took that and polished it. And that made the whole difference. The user levels for the game skyrocketed. And this is what I was meaning when everything you do tells you a story. And the story that we made boosted what the game was all about. So, let's go forward. He's on a bad mood. Okay. So, this is what's important, you know. Do your homework. And when I mean homework, I mean, don't think about work alone. You know, when you give a project, you say, well, what am I going to do with it? It's all ours have this really intrinsic fear about the blank canvas. Why? Because it's open. You can do anything about that. But the fact that you have constraints, you have technical constraints, you have communication constraints, you have logistical constraints, actually helps you to focus on what you need to do. Hello. So let's go step by step. Don't wing it, okay? This means it's good to improvise, and Portuguese are really good at improvising. That's our thing. However, it's not a good method for development. It's good to have structure. You can't anticipate all the problems you're going to have while developing some type of product, but you can get damn close, okay? Improvisation should only be used as a last resource when you have no other option. It's taking into account that, for example, the mobile market is not only the mobile, the gaming market, generally speaking, evolves at such a quick pace. You need to eliminate as much possible variables from the process as you can, because if you're giving it another element of uncertainty, you're going to give it another reason so it could fail. So obviously you don't need to be, you know, anal about it. You just can be flexible and start to adjust where needed. So don't overreach. You know, it's not uncommon. For example, when I was doing freelance work for games, I'd get a pitch for a game and say, "Oh, we need you to work on this game for us." And I said, "Okay, what's the game about?" "It's going to be the best next MMORPG. You know, we're going to top down World of Warcraft. We're going to top down StarCraft. And he said, "So what you did before?" "I was making photocopies in a t-shirt store." And I said, "Okay. So what's your experience in this?" "I don't need experience. I have faith that I can do this." And I said, "It's not the same, okay?" So it's really many startup companies fail because of this, because they don't play with their strengths. You know, we're good at this. This is our skill level. We can do this thing. For example, they make business plan. "We need to make X amount of games in X amount of time." So what can we do with what we know? And we build from that, you know? But also, you can't be afraid to take risks. For example, the first time I joined Midclip, I was the jump-started to a project that was Monster Island. They needed characters, animated characters, to play in the game, to choose optional characters, and I said, "You're going to do this." And I said, "Okay, but I've worked with animators, but I don't have any real skill in animation." Also, "Well, it's a perfect time to start." And it turned out really fun because I had, I just start remembering, because I actually spent like a year and a half working with an animation team. I also did voice acting like my dad. In some of the games at Miniclip, I made voice acting for them too. And I started learning the process. It is, okay, this is a challenge. I have the knowledge for this. I have the experience to this. Just get the mind out of the process and just do with what you know. And the animations were really funny. Once again, and this is a really good market. If you see fan art of what you do, it means that you did something well. And I did a lot. I saw a lot of fan art of the things I was making. Once again, I also take in great account the feedback from the public, because it's the best marker you have for quality, all in a sense. But it means it struck a chord, and that's what you want. You want your product to strike a chord. Another process where this is really, really visible, excuse me, sir. So, sorry, I had to check the time. So, another game, not so fluffy, but it's a project I actually have a lot of pride to have worked on it and keep on working it, was this. Pool. Initially, it was something that it was this third project I started working on after joining Miniclip. I was going to be making the menus, but I didn't have really that much experience working on user interface design. So they said, well, he's a craftsman at heart. You know, I like to do things with my hands. I actually did some blacksmithing with some friends in the past. I did sculpture. I did different things. So let's put him to make these things, the tables and the queues. So the difference is I started seeing what type of games were being made for and with these types of topics. And I saw, okay, if you have, we have country tier-based countries. Actually, country-based tiers, sorry. So other games that did the same thing. So, well, it's Paris. Let's make something with an Eiffel Tower, and it's done. Okay. And I thought, well, the game itself has a pretty huge user base, so we have to respect that. So, for example, when they asked for me for a Paris table, I came up with this. So I started, my reference for this was I started to study a lot of French architecture, sculpture, furniture design. And I ended up going to pull all my knowledge from the Baroque types of art. And didn't exactly copy the style because, you know, I don't like to copy. I like to inspire myself from it. So I learned the technique. I learned the stories. I learned how they made, when, why they made it. And I made my own version of the style. And it worked out great. The same for Egypt. I was looking all different types of, for example, the Egyptian queue. I did lots of research on scepters, Egyptian scepters, and the iconography, what everything means, and how can it be used in conjunction. When I went for, they said, well, we need a table for Canada. I said, I've never been to Canada. Okay, let's do it. So I started researching, and like hockey is the biggest thing in Canada since sliced bread. It's awesome. So I think let's make a pool table based on a hockey field. And this came out, and it had a huge success for our Canadian users. Same for China. I started to study all the symbols, all the architecture. What can I do to make it? Also respecting two issues that I had in developing art for the game, which is these are the web versions of the tables, which means they can be thicker, they can be wider, they can be more easily used to represent stuff. The mobile version has tables that are like half of this thick, so it has to be translated. It was a second constraint. So I tried to simplify the designs as much as I could, without losing this, emotional language that was attached to the object itself. I think I actually ended up being able to pull this. And then another example, which is the one I'm showing you next. This is the I also did the logos for the tiers itself themselves. And this I knew that Thailand has a really rich architecture and culture and art style. So I had to start studying lots of temples. Actually, the temple I based this art from isn't really intact anymore because it was one of the most known temples. I think it was the Ivory Temple, I think. I don't recall. Actually, one of our teammates went there for his honeymoon when I was making this. So I studied all the art. Again, what can I use to implement on the tables? What colors do they use? What's the principle behind this? This is actually, I found out these were stylized dragons, what they use on top of the buildings, because they're symbols for protection. Also the flame, it represents what we might call ascension or enlightenment. Hello. So it had a big boost with our Asian users that were from that part of the world. So every time we did something that was specific to a region, I was trying the best I could to adapt the know-how and the identity of that region to the art I was making, which is a different type of approach that I had with the Hambo, for example. It's more fictitious, it's more goofy. I consider this a synthesis in art history, for example. And we did a lot of that, for example, when developing the cues. It looks 3D, it's 2D art, actually. This is one of the promos that our amazing art team pulls out. I made both the high-res version of the cues, and they do it slight adjustments as according to what they think about for the promo. So it's a really cool process. At one point, I made over like 400 cues for the game, and it's a lot, I know. So at one point, the ideas were starting to thin out. So what happened was myself, our art lead, and the promo team art lead, just sit down in a room and say, okay, we got these assets to make. So what are we going to make them? It's going to be individual parts. We can make a series from that. What's the strategy? And then we just start working up stuff and just sketching stuff and just throwing ideas around back and forth, and we come up with solutions. This was one of those cases. So I went all to my backgrounds, you know, for theater and whatnot, and think, okay, this is opera, actually. But what type of art is used on opera? You know, that Venusian style engravings and the rose, because it's a really important element of the Phantom of the Opera. And we incorporated it on the cue. We also did, for example, for the Super Bowl. We made this version when the Super Bowl was up. We said, no, you know, America, big users of the game, let's make you a cue for the season. And they went berserk, you know. I tried as best get all the influence from the typical, you know, lemon type ball with the seams around. Obviously, the flag has to be there because, well, America. And I say this in the best possible way. This, for example, was an experiment. We wanted to see how it would turn out. This was one of the seasonal cues. Now, this enters in another set of variables, which is demographics. So they said, okay, we need a Valentine's Day cue. And everybody said, you do know that most of our users are men. Yes. I'm going to cry in a corner right now, and then I'll come back to this in 5 minutes. So we just started, well, if our users are mostly men, and we already had made a seasonal Valentine's queue last year, let's have some fun this year and see what happens. Let's go primal about this. We start pulling from all those old jokes, you know, from cavemen and whatnot, the story that you had to pluck the woman in the head and drag her through the hair. But in a very respectful way, sorry. So you started making the process of the club. And funny enough, both men and women enjoyed there will always be critics in everything you do. So some will like it, some won't. But overall, the audience really enjoyed it because it understood this is a joke. Because once again, we had that background, you know, everything we produced was so serious and we paid so much attention to detail that when they see a joke, they understand it's a joke. Let me see what's next. This was just my version for the latest seasonal cue for Christmas. So went all to the Christmas cane thing. And all the present themed and the snow, whatnot. So the thing is, it's all about context, you know? Everything you do, everything you create is based on a context. And for as silly it may seem, it's really important to have that in consideration when developing something. It's not just about do your thing. No, you can do your thing, but remember, this is the purpose. I applied this to everything I make. I remember one time, I was working on a project and some of the people that are in this room were working that project with me. So they said, well, we're making a peanut-based game. And and let's make it, we need 50 characters. Okay, till the end of the month. Okay, you can do this. I hope so. And then I started, you know, because they had to be delivered supposedly for 3D prototyping. And I started working up on the characters. And then midway, I had like 25 characters done. And the producer of that particular project, he arrived next to me and said, you know, I woke up in the middle of the night today. And I had this amazing idea when I went to the toilet. And I said, what kind of idea? You can make all the characters people from the company. And I said, I already made 25. Yeah, but you can make another 50. I have 2 weeks. And I said, no, you can do it, you can do it. That's not a good thing. So obviously the project didn't pan out because we couldn't make any deadlines. But that's what I say about working with your strengths and with your constraints. You know, if you have to get a deadline, you have to analyze and study the project as much as you can to make it come out on time. If you can't, if you have a good idea, obviously you can take it afterwards, release an update or a DLC or whatnot, or another set of packs with extras. Just do the thing that you know that can enrich the project, which leads to another very important step. This is the last, this was the key point for me, because when I started making the queues, and we were starting making seasonal queues, at the time, I said, okay, let's try to take it up a notch. The queues were basically really standard, based on real-life based queues. So I said, well, it's Halloween, come on, let's jazz it up a bit. And I ended up pulling out the chainsaw queue, and this is when we found out that people actually enjoy the different things. So we started, it created a different strategy from what we're creating for the game and make it more graphical, you know. Obviously it's not violent, it's sort of comedy-ish. And it was an experience. So at that time, since you have a good user base, you have a good experience base, you can develop from that, and this is what came up. And for the final point, this is what's important. You have to make fun, you know, you have to be fun when you're developing something, because users can tell when they're playing a game or using something you made, and it wasn't being done willingly way, you know. It's like other form of expression. If you're angry, and you might even be talking with someone you like, but you're angry, it's gonna come out, you know. It's like when they say you can't cook if you're sad or whatnot, because the people taste the sadness in the food. That's open for interpretation, but the principle is the same. Everything you do, it has to be part of you. It has to be part of your experience. It has to be part of your lifestyle. And you'll only be as good as... Okay. Thank you. You'll only be as good as what you see, okay? So a good advice for people that are developing projects, or people that want to start developing projects, is if you want to work good, don't work hard. Work smart, okay? Give it time. You know, if the idea is not coming, do something else. Relax. Explore. That's it, basically.